All right, you're now tuned in to the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 321. The Lakers get gentlemen swept by Denver. We have a great series with the Timberwolves and the Nuggets coming up. The Clippers hold on for dear life, tie it up 2-2, heading back to LA. The Phoenix Suns are a mess. The Bucks are done. And Clips set trips on a fake Clipper fan. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew. Drew! Kick that intro music. What up, podcast world?
What's up, everybody?
You know what it is. You know where you're at. It is the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 321. Drew has refused to wear his Laker hat today. He's wearing the beer hat. He's got his Alex Caruso Hair Jordan t-shirt on today. Compliments of Clips and Drew. It's a sad day for Drew. We're going to get into the Lakers here in a second. You know, Drew, your Lakers put up a really good fight. They held the lead in that series for over 70% of the series, Drew. AD was good. Bron was great as usual. Bron had 27, 8, and 6 as his average. They did hold off getting swept. They got the gentleman sweep. You did get one at home, which is a step up from last year. But the bottom line is this: Denver just has your number. Denver is the Lakers' kryptonite. They beat you on opening night. They beat you on Kobe statue night. They beat you on 40K LeBron night. And Jamal Murray crushes your heart twice in the playoffs with clutch jumpers to end the season. I want to get your thoughts, you know, on the series, on the game. I also want your thoughts on that timeout, on the challenge call in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left, knowing that, you know, this would be their final timeout. They wouldn't have another one for three more minutes. I felt Darvin Ham got bullied into making that call because they wanted to get that foul off AD. Now, like the Lakers and the Suns and possibly the Clippers that we'll talk about later, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered this summer. And we're just going to have another summer of what is LeBron going to do? There was cryptic things happening after the game yesterday where LeBron said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be a Laker next year. Darvin Ham comes out with a statement saying, you know, it's really hard to coach an NBA team when, you know, your players are in and out of the rotation. You got one starter shit in the bed for 10 games, and you're like, okay, well, that's a shot at D'Lo. And the crazy thing is, immediately after the game too, they're like, hey, Lakers are like, we want to extend LeBron 3-year, $164 million. We're open to drafting Bronny. Like, I just don't know what the answer is now. You got Bron turning 40 in December. Do you want to – it's LeBron James. I get it. But do you want to give him a 3-year extension at $164 million? At 40 years old, I just don't know what to do. So first off, sorry about your boys. I hope I'm not next. But what was your thought on the series and specifically that timeout?
Well, so I can't be super disappointed, right? And if anyone that's listening to this show has listened to more than four episodes, you've understood my point of view on this, you know, going back to since we locked in the 7 seed in that play-in game. And I'm going to hammer this one home. This ending of this round one is why it was worth to throw the game against the Pelicans and let the Pelicans get swept by Denver and let us have a chance at those OKC boys who did their damn thing against the Pelicans as well. So I want to give them a little pat on the ass and say well done on that end for the Thunder taking care of business the way that they did. But this is the exact outcome that, I mean, it was just inevitable. Going back to another podcast reference that I made, like, Thanos, when it comes to the Lakers, the Denver Nuggets are Thanos, and our Avengers, Revengers, whatever you want to call us, we do not have the Infinity Stones to take care of this Denver Nuggets team. So am I happy that we won a game? Yeah, I'm pretty happy. Am I like super bummed out that Jamal Murray just rips our heart out at every possible moment when there's a game on the line? It's devastating. So it's unfortunate that we lost the game in that fashion. it's unfortunate that, again, we've lost this series in a similar fashion to the way that we did last year, where we look in control for, like you say, 70 to 75% of every game. And then we just let it slip away, and Denver, you know, is able to execute down the road and you know, play defense, get rebounds when it matters. And we just don't. We don't seem to do that against this team. So maybe the icing on the cake here is that I still think Denver is the odds on favorite to win a championship. I'm very, very interested in seeing how this Minnesota Denver series is going to play out, because I think that will be a matchup. And, you know, maybe Minnesota with Ant Edwards has a couple Infinity Stones in the back pocket that they can use against Thanos. But for me, man, this just cements how good that really the core of Denver is, right? You know, we talked a lot about, oh, they're not as deep this year. I still think that's true. Christian Brown barely getting as many minutes as he was last postseason. Peyton Watson's good, but, you know, can still see how green he is out there and unsure of certain things at certain times. And, you know, their starting five, man, when it comes down to it, Jokic is incredible. He averaged, again, almost like an unbelievable triple-double. I think it was like 28, like 15 and 9 was his stats for the five games that we played against them. Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. averaging over 20 a game. I think Jamal was at 24, and Michael Porter Jr., the star, really, the unsung hero, if you will, of this series is Michael Porter Jr., especially with all the chaos, as we've called out in previous episodes. We were hoping that he might be a little distracted, and unfortunately, it just was laser focus for MPJ, and big, big tip of the cap to that guy. Although we did give him a lot of open shots. It's almost like we forget that he's the 6'10 sniper every game. It's like every game we have to rediscover that this guy can hit an open fucking three. All right, I'm not going to go down that road. I'm just going to tip the cap to Denver and say that they are the better team. It would have been worth us throwing the game against the Pelicans, rolling the dice against the Kings, seeing what would have happened, because at the very least, it would have put less minutes on LeBron and Anthony Davis. So let's get to the point here. We get gentlemen sweep. We pull off a victory. We could have easily won three games in this series, and it could have been obviously the other way around, but that's not how it worked out. So now what do we do? Not surprised to hear, number one, that we're willing to extend LeBron. My thoughts on this have remained the same. I don't mind offering LeBron an extension, but it has to be able to, the amount of money we pay him has to let us have flexibility with creating more space for our roster. A lot of problems with D'Lo within the series as well. Different problems than they were last year, which is concerning, because you want to get better. You want to improve on those mistakes. I think D'Lo improved on the mistakes from last year from the defensive end, but then this whole offensive and then attitude problem really reared its head in this particular season. And then, like, even after game three, before the series is over, he's leaking that he's going to be, you know, declining the option for his second year, going to go test free agency. So maybe we have some flexibility with D'Lo, but I'm okay with re-signing LeBron. I'm actually even okay with drafting Bronny in the second round. No problem with doing either of those things, if it allows us the flexibility to add pieces that we desperately need for this team. So what that means is it cannot be a three-year, $164 million contract. It has to be on the lower end of that, and he's got to understand, more for him than anything else, like for his legacy, if his true goal is to win another championship before it's all done and dusted for his career, this price point will determine that in the eyes of Lakers fans, and I think in the eyes of most LeBron fans, people out there in the NBA, will go, okay, is he taking the money and then kind of handicapping the Lakers here with what they can do? Or is he willing to be, you know, take a little bit less for the, you know, for the greater good of the team and potentially for an increased opportunity for us to actually win a title? So I'm not sure how that's going to play out. But I do think one thing we can probably say pretty comfortably, at the very least at this stage, is we will have a new head coach again for the Lakers. I think Darvin Ham has some pretty strong points as a head coach. He obviously has some glaring weaknesses as well. But I just don't think it's going to be working out for him for a return. He overperformed last year and then underperformed this year. And there's a lot of things that went against him this year, in particular, you know, a lack of shooting from the beginning part of the season, a lot of injuries to start the season. Even though LeBron and AD stayed healthy, the rest of the Lakers did not a lot of rotation throughout the rest of our roster spots. But I do think that, you know, there's enough pressure now, and especially if LeBron comes in and puts his foot down and says, I'm going to leave unless we fire Darvin Ham, the Lakers will fire Darvin Ham before letting LeBron go. Personally, my preference at this stage would be to let him actually make a decision, right? You got 1 year left on this deal, make a decision, right? And I would actually play this out. I would not offer him an extension personally. I would try to load the team with as much as we could possibly get for next season and make it one final run, like the last dance version for LeBron James with this Lakers organization. That would be how I would attack this. But I understand that's not how the Lakers do business. This is not how we have created our reputation within this league as being the safe haven for superstars. So I certainly don't want to see Anthony Davis go anywhere. Would love to keep Austin Reeves since we extended him, and then maybe make some moves with D'Lo out of the lineup. You know, maybe trying to solidify that wing spot a little bit better. Vanderbilt was non-existent this season, so we'll see what that looks like. Hachimura really underperforming, had some good moments over the course of the season, but not a great season for Hachimura. Same thing with Torian Prince. I think Torian Prince is actually probably finishing highest on my list of wings based on, you know, what we expected out of him coming into this season. But I don't think necessarily that he's going to be on the team. So I think a lot of those, you know, outside of that, that Austin Reeves, LeBron, and AD, outside of those three, I do think we're going to see a lot of movement here, and that would be how I would do it. I don't think that's how the Lakers are going to do it, but that would be, my recipe.
I just think that, are we going to cater to LeBron yet again this summer? You want another coach?
Yes, the Lakers definitely do that.
You want your boy Phil Handy in here to make you happy? Okay, he's got a player op for $50 million this summer that he can either pick up or reject. The 164 for 3 years. Like, nobody gives 40-year-olds this money. I get it, dude. LeBron is still great and still awesome. But at some point, I know we've been saying this for 7 years on our show. At some point, the time is going to catch up. It's going to catch. You saw him go down the other night. He's gone down more times this season than we've seen his whole career. And it's coming to that point. And why are we going to draft Bronny to keep Bron happy? I don't understand what they're going to do moving forward. You're right. If LeBron takes a pay cut, when has he ever taken a pay cut? He's taking pay cuts, taking the 2 year deals, you know. But if you get $164 million, could get you a lot in this market right now. I don't think Trae Young is the savior. I mean, if you can get him, sure, go for him and get him. I think there was a point, like, going up to like game three, the only person on the Lakers bench that they had 17 bench points, and they were all from Torian Prince.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
So there has to be more work on the bench. I just think it's crazy that another summer is going to be spent wondering how LeBron feels, you know. And then you're immediately after this loss, you're already as an organization, let's extend him. We will get Bronny. We'll fire the fucking coach. We'll do whatever you want. And I just think at the way that the NBA is going, even the Clippers are the oldest team in the NBA, man. Like, our window is getting very small. We're seeing these young bucks, Ant and SGA and Luka and Tatum, and these are the guys that are fucking. They're coming, coming for you. And I don't. I get what you're saying. The Lakers don't rebuild, right? They continue. No. They want to have LeBron there, and there's just a lot of questions that need to be answered. And if you're gonna cater to, put it this way, if you're gonna cater to LeBron, give him his 164, get his kid on the team and whatnot, they're going to handpick his coach, right? If he wants Phil Handy, it's going to be Phil Handy. I just don't know what the Lakers want right now, what Laker fans want right now.
Well, Laker fans always want a championship, and I think there's a reasonable expectation for a better season when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis on your roster. Given my expectations, I think my expectations coming into this season mirrored that of most Laker fans, where it's like we overachieved the previous year. We made a crazy run to the Western Conference Finals. Like, let's capitalize on the momentum, right? And let's see if we can push it even further. And then to get the healthiest seasons out of it, LeBron and Anthony Davis, that they've ever had in a Laker jersey thus far, for it to end this way is just really deflating. So championships is how Laker fans and Laker organization calculate a good season. So it's never a good season without a championship banner hanging at the end of it. So this is a bad season. But the Lakers organization have proven that we will sacrifice seasons and successful seasons for comfortability of superstars. Like if you go back to like how Kobe's career ended with us, we were bad for the last few seasons of Kobe's, you know, contracts with us before he finally had to retire. And we were willingly bad in the way that, you know, we didn't really give a shit. Like we had some really good draft picks that we all traded away. All of them are gone. Of course, we know that. We've talked about that on this podcast as well. And so we tried this like weird pseudo rebuild because this was also the first time, you'll remember, right around that area or right around that era where we weren't getting free agents to successfully sign up with us. We were not getting the most typical version of how the Lakers become good again, which is, oh, a really good player from, you know, a random team wants to be in LA and wants to be a part of this Lakers. And we get that. That was LeBron really helped us get back on track in that regard. You know, he was the biggest superstar that signed up with the Lakers. And again, it's hard to evaluate how much that meant to the Lakers because during that whole time, there was ownership turmoil. Obviously, we had, you know, some coaches that were ran through and all that good stuff. Magic Johnson came and went as a part of the, you know, president of basketball operations. Stupid decision that was. And so through all of this, I do think that we kind of owe LeBron the opportunity to end his career here. And I think that's what we're going to go with. Again, my personal preference would be to not extend him for 3 years. Like kind of, I want to see him on this last year, this deal, and like put it all in, baby. Like let's stop keeping something in the tank here for whatever, whenever it is that you're trying to keep your reserves going for. Like, let's throw it all on the line and let's have a great regular season instead of being in this 6, 7, 8, 9 bullshit that we've been in where we should be overachieving. You know, we should definitely be achieving a higher seed in the regular season than we have been. So look, if I'm going to give a prediction, we're going to offer him whatever he's asking for and we're going to draft Bronny. And I think we may not do very well or may have a very similar result to this season next year. That's kind of when I'm looking ahead, that's what I'm looking at. And I just don't see the money or the opportunity for us to get someone like a Trae Young or a Donovan Mitchell or someone like that could really change things for us because we don't have enough to give up for Donovan Mitchell in a trade or a Trae Young in a trade. We just don't. And I don't know why they would take less just to, like, help us out. And then the free agent class that we have, it's pretty good. I mean, the only guy that I would really have an eye on is there's two and they're on your team, James Harden, Paul George. Those are the only two guys that I would have an eye on for the Lakers. I'd be like, okay, maybe we can, especially James Harden, maybe we can give him like a, you know, a team friendly deal. If the Clippers don't want him and the Suns don't want him, we'll get into that later.
Team friendly's never worked out for James Harden.
Well, and you know, this is my point. If I'll end it with this, because we're talking way too long about a team that was mediocre at best this year and did a very good job in this first round of the playoffs against a very, very talented team. But LeBron should take less money than the max. And we should try to go after somebody like a James Harden if the Clippers discard James Harden. Because I think that could be, you know, potentially really solid for us. If it's a Trae Young, that's cool. If it's DeJounte, that's cool. But more than just the superstar thing, like, again, looking at Phoenix and the decision that they made to trade for a superstar and Milwaukee and the decision that they made to trade for a superstar, it doesn't have to be that. But we just need some fucking elbow room to make this squad better because the bench has really been mostly the biggest problem the last 3 months.
Yeah, and also, you know, coming off the season that AD had, the healthiest season, the best all around season he's had in years, if not ever, are you going to be able to get that again next year? Are you going to be able to get 70
right? Can't games count on that. Cannot count on that.
Right. No. So like this was your best opportunity to do it. And they both, LeBron and AD, both did everything they possibly could, right? Like, I really think they did.
They tried. They were trying really hard. We went away from all of the successful stuff. And that's the really disappointing part of it for me, is like each and every second half, even in the game that we won, we did a better job in that game, game four. But each and every single second half was like, oh, it's time for Denver's run, right? Time for Denver to make the run. And we couldn't hold them off outside of one performance because we just weren't LeBron doing the things that were successful. It is a little bit LeBron and Anthony Davis's fault when the best two players on the floor, man. They got to figure this shit out. They got to know what works. And especially for those two Hall of Fame players and one guy who claims to be a genius who knew how to run shit at 9 years old, he's got to do a better job, in my opinion, at finishing these games. That's I think that's undeniable.
I mean, he was, though. I mean, he had the last two big buckets for the Lakers. Took it to the rack, left-handed layup, gets to the free throw line. 27-8-6 for the series for a 39-year-old is, I think, our expectations, and they're very high for fucking LeBron. And I get what you're saying, especially those games where AD's not touching the rock in the fourth, right? Like, I get that. Somebody needs to step up and make the call. It's not all this comes down to the coaches. All these coaches are going to get fired, right? Doc Rivers is going to get fired. Vogel's going to get fired. Darvin's going to get fired. No, it's not the player's fault at all, right? And you got Torian Prince in the post-game presser who was laughing. He didn't know the mic was on. Him and Vanderbilt, well, I don't even know why Vando was up there. And Torian Prince is up there laughing, and then he catches himself. He's like, oh, shit, maybe I shouldn't be laughing. No, you shouldn't be laughing. Because the bench did no help for them. I just felt that LeBron and AD did as much as everybody could do better. But it is what it is. And real quick, though, what did you think of that final timeout, though? Because I think that was the play of the game. I really do. I think he got bullied into calling the challenge, knowing that you have 3 minutes left in a very close game. It's not a 15, 20-point game. It's a two-point game at that point. And you're going to go the rest of the game. Even on that last play, Jamal hits it. There was still 3 seconds left. You could have tried to timeout, advance the ball, and get a better shot. So I don't know if that's completely Darvin Ham's fault. I feel like it should have been Darvin being like, nah, fuck it. Like, let's just roll with this. We need this timeout. Whose fault do you think that is?
I don't think that's anyone's fault. I think all of these referees and the bullshit marginal, quote unquote, marginal contact that we're getting and all that shit, that I'm not going to blame anyone on that particular review. Look, you know, marginal contact is something they've introduced. It feels like just in time for the playoffs, that stupid quote that we're getting all the time. Yep. It makes for a ridiculously confusing experience when you're going to challenge anything. So I think we saw something, and obviously we had the reaction that indicated that we should take a look at it. They looked at it, and marginal contact, non-marginal contact, I don't fucking know, man. So while I understand your point, the series obviously didn't just come down to one particular play, including that. So I understand your point fully, and it would have been nice to have a timeout in the back pocket, but it's really hard to figure out what is working for challenges and what isn't working for challenges, given how they're refereeing these games now.
Well, we're going to get into some marginal contact stuff here in a second, but we got to talk. We're going to talk about my boys right now.
Well, hold on. Let me just say this. Let me ask you this question. Do you still have the Nuggets as like your favorite in the West? Like, do you see them as different, as better, as locked in for championship or at least the finals run? What do you think?
I think that number of the Lakers leading 70% of the series is pretty impressive. You know what I mean? And like, that's where I don't think Bruce Brown shifts a series. You know what I'm saying? I don't. But I think that they're not as scary as they were last year. But this version of Michael Porter Jr., who I've had stock in forever and then lost faith in him last year and 2 years ago. Look, 25-9 is what he averaged in the series. 58-45-92 splits. Just like we were saying about Anthony Edwards and the maturity, I think this guy, just showing me all the personal shit that he's been going through this past month, would have wiped out a normal man, right? Like, how do you go out and play basketball when you have all this shit going on in your life? This guy hit timely buckets. Big buckets. There was a version of Michael Porter Jr. I don't know if it was in the bubble or the year after the bubble, But there was three on ones where MPJ is pulling up for threes, right? And you're like, what in crunch time parts of games, and you're like, what is this guy doing? Yeah. He's shooting with mad confidence. He's 6'10", he could do anything. He's an X factor for me. The fact that Jamal Murray is and obviously Jokic is going to do his things. I'm more interested to see what Denver does against this defense and this super hyped up team of Minnesota. Like, I want to see it because Ant and the Wolves have something going for them right now, not just Anthony Edwards. It's like, I saw some guy tweet today. I saw some guy tweet, like, I never thought a player would make me root for Rudy Gobert, right? And he's kind of right. Like, Anthony Edwards, we're both very vocal. I don't like Rudy at all. But then when you see how he works so well with this offense and defense, and how they finally have a stretch four that spreads the floor, you got two really great defenders in Jaden and Alexander Walker when he's in, and then you have Ant, who has turned into a stopper plus an elite level, comparing him to MJ right now, which I think is a lot. If you take out Denver in the second round and you're 22 years old, then we can start having the talk like, whoa, this guy might be the next one. But that's not answering your question. Did I answer the question? I think having the Lakers in a first round series is not as scary for Denver as it would be for another NBA team, just because they've beaten them so many times. I want to see the test in Minnesota. I also just I think now in round two of all these series in the East and the West, we're going to really see the cream of the crop teams and who's going to end up getting eliminated.
Yeah, this Minnesota charge that they've made here in sweeping the Suns makes them seem pretty formidable right now. But I also think it highlights how bad the Suns are, and truthfully, the Denver Nuggets win highlights how bad the Lakers are. Right, like we did a good job. We did a better job than the Suns did against, you know, our first round opponent.
Well, let's go with the Suns then. Let's go into the Suns. Okay. Let's just do that
one. Well, hold on. I was just going to simply say, I still think Denver is going to win a championship. Mm-hmm. They have the poise and composure to do it. They have the flexibility to do it. And I think, you know, it will be a much different task, offensively speaking, going up against this Minnesota defense. So that's the biggest concern for me is like, how can they do this with, you know, the quote unquote calf strain for Jamal Murray? But that's going to be difficult because the T-Wolves defense is something else. So we can proceed, but I still think Nuggets take the whole thing.
So that I think that's looking a little too far forward as far as the championship, because now with Porzingis and his non-contact injury to his calf the other day and his injury prone ass, like, you don't know if Porzingis is removed from the situation, that's huge for Boston. They are not the same team. They aren't. Derek White's playing great, but if you lose 7-3 Porzingis and a threat on the outside to bring Jokic out of the paint, like that just changes the whole dynamic. I think that it's a strong possibility whoever wins that series, and I'm basing this off of like no Kawhi Leonard, and we're going to get into that for a while in a minute. But whoever wins that series has a really good chance of winning. It's going to be the best series, I think, that we're going to have the whole playoffs, even going into the finals. But since we're on Phoenix, let's talk about Phoenix. I know we covered it a lot in last show with Sunsets. We kind of foreshadowed exactly what we felt was going on, and it's a disaster. It was absolutely a disaster. This season, this postseason, you're talking about, you know, Beal and Booker and KD, they got zero playoff wins. They got zero first round picks from 25 to 2030, zero second round picks from 2024 to 2030. You got Bradley Beal, remaining contract, 24-25, $50 million. 25-26, 53.7. 26-27, 57.1. 3 years, $161 million. That's what the Lakers are trying to give LeBron. You know what I mean? You're talking about a final game. After this guy said, man, I ain't never been swept in my life, and I'll be damned if I get swept this time. You had 9 points, bro. 4-for-13 shooting. End of the game, horrible turnovers. Fouled out of the game. You shun the coach. You blow off Frank Vogel when you come back to the bench. Then you have a sun source. I saw this, Drew, on Matt Ishbia. Quote, he has no idea what he's doing when it comes to basketball. It's like Looney Tunes around here. It's felt unstable since Ishbia arrived. He's a good guy and everything, but he's just very involved, too involved. I know he played college basketball, but I'd venture to say he has no idea what he's doing when it comes to basketball, yet he's making a lot of the big decisions. And then immediately after this game, it's like Stephen A. comes out and says, Devin Booker wants to go to New York. KD is going to be unhappy once again. And honestly, KD, I'm over it. I'm over it more than I'm over like the LeBron don't know what you're going to do this summer thing. You cannot just pick up and leave this organization again. We know he says I was unhappy with my role on the team. What role? What are you talking about? You've had legitimately the same role your whole career is to get buckets. And that's what you did. You cannot play this shit again. We're over it. We're tired. If you want to go to Golden State or back to OKC, whatever you want to do, man, they are in trouble. And I kind of, as much as I don't like Devin Booker, I kind of feel bad for him. I kind of do and I kind of don't. But this just didn't work out. And hopefully this puts an end to like to big threes. It puts an end to big threes and gets us back to like, can we just get great basketball teams, cohesion, chemistry? Ishbia and the front office knew from the jump, we have all this money dedicated. How are we going to build a team around these guys? And this is the shitty thing, Drew. Like, you got to worry about KD and Booker and, like, is there trade value and whatnot? Their biggest decision is like, dude, are we going to pay Royce O'Neal? Like, we got to pay Royce O'Neal, you know? And that's, like, the decision they have to make. And Royce, who will be coveted by a lot of teams. I told you, I'll take Royce O'Neal any day of the week on my team. But it was unfortunate that Grayson Allen got hurt. He had a great year. They just extended him. I don't think he changes the series. Minnesota was going to wax them regardless. But they just looked like, after like game two, Drew, I think they were just like, man, this really ain't going to work. And I know I'm going on a minute on this. Frank Vogel, they say his job's in danger, obviously, because they got swept in the playoffs. It came out that on April 9th, when we killed them, Drew, remember when we killed them, we were up 50 on them and whatnot, that Frank Vogel was screaming at these guys at halftime. You could hear it from outside the locker room. And the players said, oh, it looked forced. People were rolling their eyes. Some players were thinking they wanted to laugh about it, right? That's what they were saying. Like, it was kind of laughable. And it's like, dude, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, y'all have never won shit. This guy's won a chip. Like, listen to your coach. Some of these players just don't want to be coached, man. He's just, if anything, the coach wants to win more than the players do. He knows that his job is always on the line. He don't have $50 million coming guaranteed Bradley Beal on the net. You know, your no trade clause. He doesn't have that. So the fact that these guys, they don't want to listen and whatnot, I think it's a mess, Drew, from Ishbia all the way down.
I got to assume that the Washington Wizards are laughing their asses off right now because of that no trade clause they gave Bradley Beal. Dude, nobody is going to get another no trade clause for as long as the NBA is around. This is potentially the worst possible thing that the Phoenix Suns could have done to their organizations, tie them to this anchor of a man, this anchor of a contract. So Clips, I'm right there with you, man. I do feel bad for Frank Vogel. I feel bad for Devin Booker. I do not feel bad for Matt Ishbia. This is, I mean, look, he made some drastic changes, wanted to win immediately, and that is not surprising, right? When you are a billionaire and you've done all of this, you know, in the business world, and you're a quote-unquote basketball player, former walk-on or whatever he was to Michigan State, and shout out to Tom Izzo, but there's a reason Tom Izzo never coached in the NBA, bro, right? And there's a reason that you probably never played in the NBA, Matt, or didn't even really play as much for Tom Izzo, is because it's a different world. It is a different world when you're talking about high school basketball to college, college to the NBA, and even obviously, you know, Euro is all, everything's different. It's not all the same. It's not all just basketball. Now, the principles and certain things like that, they obviously translate. But when it comes to like building a roster, and when it comes to offensive schemes in the NBA and defensive schemes, you really need to comb through that with a fine tooth comb and have experts on the coaching staff that are dedicated to working out specific things. And you need to work with them to build a roster that they think is actually manageable to be able to play offense and defense with. I don't want to hear anything from Kevin Durant at this point. I understand he can be frustrated with how the season finished. That's fine. You can say, look, it was a frustrating season. I thought we were going to be better. I thought I was going to be play better. Whatever version of that you would like to come up with is fine. But for him to just be like, I'm unhappy, that just doesn't fly with me at all, man. Same thing with Brad Beal. And though, like, I kind of mirror your feelings. I feel for Devin Booker. And if that guy can force his way to New York to go play with Tibbs, fucking do it, bro. Like get you out of there. Yeah, I mean, he has served his time there in Phoenix, man. He's served that organization very well, brought them to a finals, fell short to Giannis, which is understandable. But if I'm Matt Ishbia, if I'm, you know, president of basketball operations or Frank Vogel, whoever it is, we got to start looking at what can we do to get off some of this money, right? And to me, you know, this Beal and Booker combo has been reminiscent of like the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray combo, where as opposed to, you know, having 2 point guards, they have two shooting guards, right? So Atlanta's got 2 point guards. Why don't we work something out here, right? Brad Beal probably would love Atlanta. I have to assume that he might, you know, given that he went to University of Florida. So if you can do a Brad Beal for DeJounte Murray trade, I don't know who says no, Clips. What do you think about that? I know that Brad Beal would have to stamp it. Brad Beal would have to stamp it, but he clearly hasn't enjoyed himself very much in Phoenix thus far. I think he might put a stamp on it.
He was injured too a lot, so
right.
That's fair to say.
Yeah.
On the Atlanta side, I just think they're trying to get off Trey and keep DeJounte, right? But the bottom line, I think Phoenix does need a point guard. I think Bradley Beal would like to play in Atlanta. He'd be way more free. He can get his buckets like he did in Washington. You're still not going to win shit. If winning isn't what matters, then yeah, go to Atlanta. But you know, you mentioned Phoenix going to the finals. All that happened with Chris Paul. Like, Chris Paul is the reason why all that happened. He changed the culture. It's what he does. He did that for every organization he went to, whether it was the Hornets, the Clippers, Suns, like whatever it is. And it's because they had a point guard. So I think you're totally right. Like, it is, and I meant to say it shouldn't be the death of the big three, the death of the super team. Bring the big threes back and have the death of the super team. Because it just doesn't work, and we're beginning to really find out that it's defense that really, with like everybody can score, you're gonna get buckets, but you have to be able to play defense. And defensively, they were a mess. Bradley Beal was a mess. That Anthony Edwards bang out was because it was poor defense, you know. And I think we've said this all the time. I just think getting the three best players on a team doesn't mean you're going to win shit. We're seeing this all the time. Even when injuries play a part, we're seeing with Milwaukee, with Dame, and I mean, Dame and Giannis. If you have no Dame, no Giannis, you literally have no chance. Like, there is absolutely no chance.
Right.
But from what you're saying, I think Bradley Beal would sign. It doesn't matter. He's going to get his $50 million no matter what, wherever he signs off.
That's my point. Yeah.
Yeah. So Atlanta might be a great, great choice.
Right. And you know, we're just assuming that Atlanta wants to get off Trae Young, and because there's not been any sort of concrete reporting on, you know, whether or not Trae Young was even on the trade block, you know, this season. We know that DeJounte was on the trade block for a little bit and they didn't like what they were getting offered. And so the easier substitution there is to keep Trae Young. He's your franchise guy. That's the guy that you traded Luka for. That's a guy that's brought you to an Eastern Conference Finals. That's the one that you would most likely keep in that scenario, as opposed to an older DeJounte Murray who has, you know, not really ever done much as far as individual standouts or postseason standouts in his career. Different situations, obviously, but you know, the money kind of works, right? If you can poach, you know, Sadiq Bey and DeJounte Murray for Brad Beal, and then everyone can have, you know, then Phoenix gets their point guard. I think DeJounte would play very well on that team. He would be a decent defender as well from the point of attack. He's not an amazing defender, but him and Book, and then you can start filling shit out that way. But if you had to pick, Clips, between Beal, KD, Booker, you know, staying or going, any of them? Do you think there's going to be any sort of movement there? Or do you think they're just going to re-up with those three and try it again?
I think that first thing is, I think it's time for Booker to really be like, all right, dude, I'm the franchise guy. I've been here from the jump.
I'm the captain now.
I've dropped the 72. I was here when we were shit. I was here when we were in the finals. I don't think he's as vocal. Maybe he shouldn't, because most of the shit that he says ends up biting him in the ass anyways, right? But I think Ishbia in the front office, you need to have a relationship with your star players. What do you want, Buck? Do you think this is going to work out again? Should we run this back again with the allotted money that we have, which isn't much? Because if it's like, look, you got way more out of Grayson Allen and Nurkic this year than most people thought, right?
Yep.
And it still wasn't enough. So I don't know what the market is for 36-year-old Kevin Durant. And you know that's the thing, bro. Is everything that came to my head, I just kept thinking of Kevin Durant being like, I'm fucking Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Well, you know what you are right now, bro, is you've been, you know, I think it hasn't been great for the past like 6 years since you won a chip, right? Nothing's worked out for Kevin Durant. You had the perfect situation. You would still be with Golden State. You might have two more chips with Golden State, but no, you let your feelings get involved and you wanted your own team. And then you get your own team in Brooklyn and you want your buddy, you want Kyrie there and you want DeAndre there. But no, we want our own coach. We want Steve Nash. No, we don't want Steve Nash anymore. We want Jacques Vaughn and we can coach ourselves. Oh, I want James Harden. I want him. Did that super team work? No. What's going to make you think that this super team's going to work? And honestly, I know Kevin Durant could give two shits what we think or the media thinks, but if you end up going back to Golden State, which there is like thoughts of this happening, do you know what that looks like, man? Do you know what that looks like? So I know Kevin Durant is a good dude and everything, but this team jumping ain't working, man. And it's not going to, I don't know. What you're going to get from Kevin Durant. Does he push the needle? What if Milwaukee gets him next year, right? For whatever. Could they end up getting him? Everybody's talking about Philly. Is it Philly and Kevin Durant? Because they got the money. If Paul George doesn't work out or Donovan Mitchell doesn't work out for Philly, is that where you're going to go? And then what's going to happen? It's the same thing with Paul George. Are you just going to go to Philadelphia and play with another injury-prone guy, and then all the shit's going to be weighed on your head? Because that's what it looks like. It didn't work in Brooklyn when you were there. It didn't work in Phoenix when you were there. It didn't work in OKC when you were there. So I don't know what the next move – I just don't know what the trade value is for 36-year-old Kevin Durant coming off another sweep, dude. There's a bigger market for Booker. Like if Booker said, hey, right, man, I think it's time for me to get out of here, it's run its course. I think you can get a lot back for Devin Booker.
Yeah. I mean, that would require Ishbia being like, fine, we'll let you go. And it doesn't necessarily feel like he's that kind of a guy from what we understand. So it seems like you're leaning towards everyone runs it back.
I think changes need to be made. I think they are they're in the hole on this. It's going to be really difficult really difficult to not run it back. That's what I think.
Yeah. I agree. I think their options are limited, and the easiest move at this point is the Booker trade. That would be the easiest. There would be the most teams that would have their hand up for Devin Booker and say, okay, what do you want? Like, let's have this, let's make this deal. And then it would be about, you know, kind of dependent upon what Booker's interest is, but like there could be a sneaky Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker trade, like that they could blow up Devin Booker's whole life and ship him to Cleveland. you know, it doesn't have to be glamour in New York Knicks or Brooklyn or, you know, Miami or, you know, whatever else people are going to throw out there for Devin Booker. It might be something shiesty like a Donovan Mitchell for Devin Booker trade, which we can get into the weeds with a little bit. But I have then, you know, I kind of tend to think that they are a little bit handcuffed here. You know, they can change the coach. That probably will happen. But my guess is Ishbia is also probably pretty proud, and he was the one who stuck his neck out to make this big move and to be like, no, this is going to work. So my guess is when pride comes on the line, he's going to double down and say, okay, no. No one's going anywhere. We're going to run this shit back. We're going to get a different coach who's got a different scheme for the offense, and we're going to make this shit work. So that's my expectation. So with those expectation clips, I have jotted down a few names here. that are all free agents this upcoming offseason in a month or so, 2 months, that are potential point guard options, right? Assuming that we have Beal, Booker, and Kevin Durant on the roster, the biggest glaring need was a point guard. I think everyone agrees with that. So I'm going to list these guys, all of them at once, and then I want you to pick your favorite landing spot for the Phoenix. Only one. You can pick as many as you want. I don't give a fuck. But you know, I'm going to read them all in a row, and then I want you to react to them. The first one you're not going to like is James Harden. We talked a little bit about him potentially going to the Lakers, but he is potentially a free agent this year. Depends on how things go for the Clippers and, you know, where he wants to be in his life, because he might just want to be in LA and he might want to do a little family deal like Russell Westbrook did. So James Harden, number one. D'Angelo Russell, assuming that he's been forthcoming in his feelings towards the end of the season, he's going to opt out and become a free agent. So D'Angelo Russell, number two. Spencer Dinwiddie, definitely going to be a free agent. Definitely not going to be on the Lakers next year, I don't think. Tyus Jones, point guard there for the Wizards. I believe he's on the Wizards right now, but he was in the top, I think, top 40 in assists this season. De'Anthony Melton. Reggie Jackson, Kyle Lowry, Patrick Beverley, Monte Morris, or the sleeper pick, point forward, Kyle Anderson. So those are the 10 that I just listed there for you. What strikes you as potentially the most intriguing?
Well, I'm surprised. First of all, I'm surprised you didn't put Ben Simmons in there. Ben Simmons isn't even on the list. Can't put Ben.
I can guarantee Benjamin? The quickest way to get Kevin Durant out of there is to bring Ben Simmons.
Okay, but there is no way on God's green earth that James Harden and Kevin Durant could be on another team together. Like, they cannot make that happen again.
When we talk about the Clippers and Mavericks matchup, I was going to bring up the rivalry between Kyrie and James Harden. I think that was truthfully the rift. If we remember how that all went down in Brooklyn, right, it was Kyrie and Harden jawing at each other, not KD. I think it's probably still warm feelings for KD and the beard.
I think the best one is Tyus out of all that. Like, he would be the guy. He would be in, not as expensive as the rest of the guys you're talking about. Harden would be great, but Tyus would be the guy that you can – he's young. He's a real point guard, you know what I mean, and can get people to their spots. He's tough. He's not a shoot-first guy. He's a real point guard. So I think he would be the best one out of all of them, in my opinion. Harden – we don't know where that's going to – I don't know what's going to happen with this. We're going to talk about Harden in a minute. But Tyus would be my pick. What about you?
I think all 10 of these are legit options here. And I think because they're going to have to get creative with numbers, they're going to have to get someone that goes like, fuck it, I'll take a two-year deal, right, with a player option, and it can be $11 million. You know what I'm saying? It can be like kind of a reasonable deal. I honestly think Pat Bev could be really solid here. I don't know how well or not that would jive with Book and Katie and all these other guys, right? Because that's a whole another conversation about like what the locker room would feel like, what the leadership thing would be. But maybe Pat Bev could be the perfect combo. His handles aren't ideal, but at least he can bring the freaking ball up. You know, he knows how to bring the ball up and initiate the offense, and then doesn't need many shots. Wants to be the defensive juggernaut on the other side of things. So I like Pat Bev there, but I understand if that's not going to be the option. I really like the Kyle Anderson point forward option. I just think it gives some defensive flexibility. Kyle has never really put his stamp on being a starter in this NBA. He's did that a couple times with the Grizzlies, and maybe it doesn't work out. But in my head, I'm like, oh, I love the point forward Kyle Anderson bringing the ball up. But the other one that I like the most, I think, is De'Anthony Melton. That's another kind of defensive player that they can add to a very heavy offensive roster, who is fine without having to shoot 10 times a game, right? And is willing to facilitate, played point guard and shooting guard, so he can kind of switch in and out and play alongside Booker and or Beal. Those are my three most intriguing. But all 10 of those, I legitimately think, will probably have a meeting with the Phoenix Suns this free agent offseason if they all end up becoming free agents.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That's not a great pool to choose from, though. And like, maybe throw your hat in the ring for like Orlando has a bunch of guards, right?
So Fultz, right now, Markelle Fultz is going to be a free agent. Is a name that I didn't write down on this list because I think there could be a sign-in trade for Beal. Again, this is probably a no for Beal here, but there could be an Orlando, like Fultz-Ingles Beal trade, if you can get creative there on some sign-in trades. But both Ingles and Fultz are going to be free agents as well, I think, in some capacity this offseason.
These guys are going to be running this shit back with Grayson Allen as their point guard. That's what's going to be happening, man. How sad is that?
Yeah, it's most likely.
Dude, we're 50 minutes into the show and haven't even talked about the Clippers. Can we talk about my Clippers?
I don't know. Let's talk about the Pacers. No, dude, go ahead.
All right, man. We got to talk about my boys. We tied it up. We're coming back to LA 2-2, man. This has been quite the emotional roller coaster. No Kawhi game one, game two, which we recorded. We had super rusty Kawhi, hadn't played and, you know, missed nine games. We get super rusty Kawhi. Game three, we just have a shell of Kawhi. I knew it from the jump, Drew. I knew from the first three possessions of the game. I've watched every single game Kawhi Leonard has played as a Clipper. I knew something was up. And then he caught an alley-oop from Paul George and he hung on the rim for about 8 seconds, and I'm like, yep, that's a wrap. We're not going to have Kawhi definitely for the next game. I don't know what's going on. The inflammation ain't there. I give Kawhi props for playing through it, but he's not ready. The knee is not ready yet, and it is what it is. I want to say something before we talk about this game. This is for Reddit boards. This is for the podcasters. This is for the Clipper fan pages and everybody that's talking about the Clippers are a better team without Kawhi Leonard on it. You are in no world are we, the Clippers, a better team without Kawhi Leonard playing. We are a better team without 50% Kawhi Leonard playing. Okay? Right. The whole dynamic of the team changes. We're not better without Kawhi. We are better without 50% Kawhi, because that takes away shots from other players, more reps from other players. We do play a little more freely without Kawhi in the lineup. But in order for us to win anything, we need Kawhi back. So I do think we should be up 3-1 in this series, but we are not. That game four was the most emotional roller coaster Clipper game I have ever been a part of. And I said, dude, my left arm went numb in the third quarter. I died twice. I had two heart attacks. It was absolutely insane. We went up 31 points on these guys. Like Brian Siemens, everything we shot went in the hoop. I mean, we're up 31. Brian Siemens, like, they could throw a key into a lock right now, and we could have. Everything was wet. And all I kept – nothing. We're up 31, and I'm like, I hate this. I hate everything about this game. I know what is going to happen. And I was by myself. I'm like, I'm not drinking till after this game. Then my boy Antoine came over because he wanted to check it out, and we started losing, man, chipping away at the game. Kyrie was absolutely amazing. Was amazing. And the things that he was doing in that game were absolutely unbelievable. I just thought the Clippers came out. We played really hard. I know we blew. We went down one. We blew a 31-point lead. You know what was the last team to come back from a 31-point lead, Drew?
The Clippers,
the historical at Oracle, if you remember that. One of the craziest moments of my life. But I was getting so wild, Drew, that midway through the third quarter, you know where I live, I got hundreds of people walk past my crib. I got a park across the street. I was sweating. I had to open the door. Antoine's here. And I see a dude eating ice cream with his girlfriend across the street, like walking past the park. Dude's got a Westbrook jersey on. And it pissed me off. It rubbed me the wrong way.
Clippers Westbrook jersey or just a regular?
Clippers Westbrook jersey, zero. And he's a little bro. You know what I mean? He's a bro walking by with his girl eating ice cream. No shirt under it and whatnot, and it rubbed me the wrong way. I'm like, we are in the trenches right now, and you're wearing a jersey. Anyways, it pissed me off, and then immediately, about 5 minutes later, during the game, we're losing our lead. I see him walk past my window again. I open the door like I'm Kramer from Seinfeld. I swing that bitch open. I'm on three vodka Gatorades, and I'm like, yo, Westbrook. And he turns around with his girl. His girl looks at me with her eyes wide open. I'm like, you know, we got a game on right now. And he's like, what game? I said, we got a playoff game, Westbrook. Why are you rocking the jersey? And he's all, oh, I'm a fake fan. And I said, take the jersey off, bro. And I shut my door, right? And it fired me up. Why are you wearing a Westbrook jersey? Dude, I was set tripping. Drew, I was set tripping at my own house, bro. I was gangbanging at my own house. I was about to make him take off the jersey, bro. That's how heated I was. That's how mad I was, man.
Well, he at least admitted it. He admitted that he's a fake fan. He said that, right?
He took a lick of the ice cream. He's like, I'm a fake fan. He's probably like, fuck you, guy. You know? So his girlfriend was scared, but I was out there set tripping right in front of on my porch. Anyway, I digress. That fourth quarter, back and forth game, I just kept saying to myself, this is why we got James Harden. This is the exact reason why we got James Harden. And
Floater King.
He was amazing. We hit clutch free throws. Look, we blew the lead. I knew it. I knew this was going to happen. We need to figure out a way to hold the lead. Harden was huge. PG said on his podcast today, he's like, towards the end of that game, PG told James Harden, yo, bring it home for us, man. Bring it home. He's like, I got us on D. You bring it home. And that's exactly what he did. Big time buckets. And I want to say something really quick. As great as that Kyrie layup was with three defenders on him, only Kyrie could make that shot. One of the best shots I've seen in basketball. I'm not going to lie.
So good. So good.
Beautiful. It's poetry, man. This man, this, the way this man plays basketball is beautiful. And the fact that he was on fire. But the PG corner three, dude, the PG corner three was insane. Absolutely insane. Behind the backboard, nothing but net, dribble, dribble, step back, hand in your face. PG, epic, especially after having such a crazy, he had 26 in the first half. We were talking about how hot Dame had 26 in the game. Siakam had 26 and a half. And same thing with Paul George. So Luka was good. Luka was in foul trouble, which was a big deal. That's why Harden was able to get to the rim a lot. And we were talking about marginal contact, right? This is the one thing I got to say about marginal contact. And somebody called us out on our YouTube video when we were talking about the refereeing in the 76ers series. This guy was pissed. His name was Cranky or something. He's like, is that all you guys like to talk about, you bums? And I'm like, thanks, Cranky. It needs to be talked about, though, whatever you want to say. Thanks for commenting on our video. There was two plays in that game. First of all, I think Luka should have had four technicals that game. He got one. Luka's bitching at the referees the whole game. If we're gonna tee up players for smacking their wrists together and looking at the refs, Luka should have been teed up four or five times in that game. There was one play where Harden is guarding him, Drew, and Harden's just is in his grill and makes marginal contact with him. No whistles blown, and Luka looks back at the ref like, and then blows the whistle. Like, they're getting bullied in to making these calls. And then it's just an acting fest on both sides. It's not just Clippers or Dallas or Lakers or Phoenix or whatever. It's happening all the time. But they're getting bullied in to blowing the whistle, and it's driving me crazy. I'm happy we won that game, because that could have gone – I mean, all I was thinking about was how – I mean, I'm not going to be able to wake up in the morning. I'm going to have so many text messages, so many people saying how we blew the lead. I was preparing for it. And now we're going back 2-2. We know we can beat this team. We know Kawhi's not playing. He's out for game five. I don't think he's playing the series. I don't know if he's going to play in the playoffs at all. I'm thinking he will at some point if we make it to the next round. But we can beat these guys. If you have Harden playing like that, PG playing like that, Zoo playing like that, and then you get some help from guys like Norman Powell and Terrence Mann, if you can, do something. But I'm feeling pretty good 2-2 going home, Drew. That's my rant.
Yeah. Each one of these games has been pretty interesting. And this one had a similar feeling to game one. You'll remember game one, you guys ready to go, raring right out the gate, knocking down shots, playing good defense, and Mavericks just like weren't there. Kind of similar feel to this one to start the gates. And then, you know, they start clicking. And Kyrie was incredible. 40 points for Kyrie is incredible. That layup should be hanging in the Hall of Fame somewhere. The fact that he made that layup should be, it's like one of the most difficult layups I've ever seen anyone make. And I know that this gets always thrown out every time that Kyrie makes one of these, but I do really think that he is the best small finisher we've ever had. Like, you know, AI is always brought up there, and I think Steph in his own rights had some really tough finishes and gets real creative with the floaters and everything. But man, Kyrie's just another, he's just another beast when it comes to like, I'm attacking the rim, body control, how to jump, what angle to jump at, how long to hold the ball, the double, triple, quadruple clutches.
And he then had the, a hezzy, bro. He had a hezzy that put PG in just in the spin cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, look, you know, that's a game that you're obviously happy to tie the series coming back home for sure. Going down 3-1 in that moment after being up by 30 points, nightmare scenario. That's the shit. That's the stuff of nightmares, man. That brings Doc Rivers crawling back. That's Josh Smith crawling back in there. And, you know, your boy James Harden now wearing a Clipper jersey in that one as opposed to Houston.
Who was the other one from Florida State? It was Josh Smith. And then Josh Smith wasn't before. It was the other guy.
Corey Brewer. From
Corey
Florida.
Brewer, that's who it was.
From Florida, not Florida State. Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. But anyway, it was a really, really excellent fourth quarter. I mean, again, I'm not being a fan of one of these teams. It's an awesome game to watch. We got home from Vegas and dropped our bags off, you know, walking in the door, and it was like second half was just starting. So I got to watch that whole comeback. Like, I watched the better part of the game. but, dude, yeah. James Harden is who I kind of want to focus on here because the way that this game ended was something that was lacking from his performances at times. Philly fans will remember last season when, you know, I think in similar situation where you have Paul George turning to James Harden to say, fucking take us home, baby. I'm assuming that may have been said by Joel Embiid to James Harden at some point during the last season in Philly. And James Harden was very reluctant to continue to go back to the well last postseason. And the well is, all right, you're going to just guard me one-on-one. You're not going to let me get into my step back. You're going to force me to the rim, and then you're going to drop and cover the alley-oop. So you're going to force me to shoot these floaters. And he just flew away. He floated away. And the game was wrapped up in a bubble because James Harden put it there. For him to be so efficient on those, I mean, I think there was five or six at least that I counted floaters that they were just begging for him to shoot. And he was just like, all right, fine. I've done this for 12 seasons. I helped invent the floater as a part of people's games in the NBA. That was really, really impressive. And it was something that I was nervous about because I think his, in those moments, he can be somewhat passive at times, like we've seen in previous spots, but especially like last season. And it was really, I think it was a really important step for him, for this Clippers organization, but for him personally, to be able to achieve that in the fourth quarter, where they're like, yep, just do that. We're just going to give you this shot. And you shouldn't pass out of it because we're staying home on all the shooters, and you can't throw the lob because we're waiting for you to throw that lob. Really well done. Really super well done from James Harden there. Massive performance. One of the better fourth quarter performances in a crunch moment that James Harden has ever had in his career. So I just wanted to mention that because I think that was something that was holding the Sixers back. And I bet a lot of Sixers fans, if they watched that game, they'd be like, where the fuck was that in game six and game seven, you know, against the Celtics last season. So I think that's going to be really important based on the fact that we assume that Kawhi again is just not right. Right. So if it's going to come down to Kawhi not being right and Russell Westbrook, you can't count on him to make any shots, but you can count on the effort. You just can't count on him to put in buckets anymore. That means it's got to come from Paul George and it's got to come from James Harden. And I think they can do it, bro. I do. I think they can do it. And if James Harden can perform like this and have the cojones to just say, nah, fuck it. All right, you're going to give me this. Then I'm going to keep taking this and I'm going to keep making it. That's a huge step in the right direction for this team.
I love Russell so much and I have so much Russell stock, but it's unbearable sometimes. I mean, Brody was unhinged game three. I've never seen something. He was going at the refs, going at Luka, going at Gafford, going at everybody. You know what? Let me bring that up really quick. iconic. This is when I knew we were going to blow the lead, is when Paul George did the PJ Washington, when he did this in the second quarter. When he did that, I'm like, oh no. I'm like, that's a mental note really quick. That's iconic if we win the game.
Yeah.
I hate the Rock the Baby. I hate all that shit. I'm very glad we won that game because Paul would have heard a lot of it. Look, I want way more Russell Westbrook defense and way less Russell Westbrook offense. That's just what I want.
Yeah.
They're giving him the three-pointer for a reason. He hit the first one in game four, which was a blessing. But it's just he's going so damn fast all the time, and we need his energy so bad. I just want him to relax a little bit. Mason Plumlee's trying his ass off too, but he's probably like 65-70%.
Funny enough, and I go back and forth on this particular stat, but Russell Westbrook does have the highest plus minus rating for the Clippers out of the entire roster throughout all four games that have been played. He's plus 5.5. The next best performer is Big Zoo at plus 3.3. So that is an indication. On some, you know, again, I take that stat with a little bit of a grain of salt because so much changes given the lineups and the rotations and when the guys go in versus, you know, the actual game flow. But in the minutes that Russell Westbrook played, and I think that shows out generally speaking, he is up 5.5 on the plus minus on the box score.
Well, everything immediately changes, Drew. I've said this. There's a huge shift immediately when he comes in. Most players need a couple reps, a couple minutes to like get acclimated and get their legs right. Russell is ready. Caged pit bull. He's going in and messing with everybody. He's up in Luka's neck as soon as he gets in the game. And we love it. But he is so amped and so busy that it's a lot, man. And I just don't know where the mid-range went. They are begging for him to shoot the three-pointer, and we're passing it to him. If you're open, I get it. Take the shot. And I've said this before. When Russell's got to think about the three-pointer, it is 99% not going down. It is 99%. But if he catches that thing in motion, it's wet. Really, it can be. I can honestly tell when Russell's going to hit a three-pointer or not.
Yeah.
And if he has too much time to shoot that thing, I guarantee you he ain't
making
that.
Yeah, it's almost like 50-50, like backboard or rim when he has too much time. It's like that's the 50-50, not like will it go in or not.
I also think that Russ, like he was so bad in that game three. Like he was so frustrated. The fans were going at him. He was pissed. He was in a lot of different games that night with the fans, with the refs, with Luka, with PJ. And I just think it was one of those games where he's like, all right, I'm just going to have a mental breakdown right now. I'm going to go at everybody. And he should have been suspended a game. I definitely think he should have been suspended. But again, marginal suspensions, right? So they're not going to kick out Luka in a playoff game, and they're probably not going to kick out Russell. Russell, like if that was Draymond Green, Draymond's done for two games. Like if Draymond's doing that, Draymond's gone for two games. So I think this game five is the most important game of the whole series. That is for tomorrow night. And if history repeats itself, I'm not expecting a big game from James Harden. I want a big game from James Harden, but we need to go in full Paul George mode again. This guy has done this. He's been this for us before. I need him to be that guy again, and I'm looking for Norm and for T-Man, and Russell plays much better at home. It's a collective game, man.
Yeah, game fives are very, very crucial. I think the stat is something like 72% of, you know, teams that win the game five when it's tied up tend to win. It might even be higher than that. But obviously, you know, you get the home court advantage. This is where that four versus the five seed at the end of the regular season really comes into play here. Love to have this game at home in L.A. as opposed to in Dallas, although both teams have won away from home. Just an interesting stat here, Clips. A lot has been talked about how well Luka is playing, generally speaking. I think most people would agree. I mean, his stat line in his last game was like 29, 10, and 10 or something like that. But overall, for the series in the four games, the only glaring difference in the statistics that I can find out for the teams is the three-point percentage. And a lot of that is on Luka, who's taking 12 three-pointers a game and only shooting it at 26%. The Clippers, as a team, are averaging 43.5% from three, and Dallas, as a team, 32.8% from three. So if those percentages hold up I'm feeling really good about the Clippers' chances to come out of this series. I don't know when. It could be in game six. It could be in game seven. But that will be the biggest factor for me as I watch these next, you know, two or three games, whatever, however it shakes out, is can Luka get on track a little bit with his three-point shot? Because I think that's really the only piece that's missing. And I think a lot of that is contributed to the level of defense and attention the Clippers are playing Luka with. But, you know, it's a little surprising for him to be under 30% from three.
I mean, he's still getting his points. People are talking like, yeah, Luka's doing un-Luka things. He's averaging right what he averages. This is what he does. Is he due for a 40 or a 45 or a 50-point night? Yeah. When his three is falling – look, I said this to my friend Antoine that was here watching the game, who doesn't even really care about basketball. And I honestly – he doesn't. But I said, that man right there, Luka, is the scariest player in the NBA, in my opinion. He is the scariest. Everything he shoots, everything he does – he is the scariest player to go up against, in my opinion. It's not SGA. It's not Anthony Edwards. Like, Luka is the scariest. So when you're talking about – I would have thought that the glaring numbers would be points in the paint with all the lobs that Dallas is getting. They're running the lobs for Lively and Gafford, and they're getting 4, 5, 6 a game, 7 a game when they pull Zoo out and there's nobody in the paint to block it. But really quick, going back to James Harden. In the 4 playoff games against the Mavs, 12 of 18 on step-back jumpers, 8 of 15 on pull-up jumpers, 7 of 11 on driving floaters. So that's something we need to exploit. That's actually working, right? And mind you, again, like a lot of those floaters in the fourth comes on Luka having 5 fouls. He can't touch it. He doesn't want to get his 6 because that was looking like an overtime game. You cannot go into overtime without a Luka. But I hope we're not jinxing Harden. I'm knocking on wood. But this is why we got Harden. And what a blessing. Because in so many years past, this is what we did not have. It's like right now, we would be betting on Reggie Jackson to be the James Harden of our team. You know, and Reggie did have big moments for us at times. But I'd rather have James Harden. I'd rather go down with the ship with James Harden shooting. We need you shooting, bro. You're there to shoot and to get the ball to the people that can shoot.
And the whole idea around trading for James Harden is for the exact scenario you find yourselves in. Yep. Paul George or Kawhi Leonard being injured. This is kind of what you can bank on. Unfortunately, there's a pattern here. And so the whole idea about like, oh, you can't trade for James Harden because then there's too many guys. No, this is exactly why you do it. Because it most likely Kawhi or PG or both weren't going to make it to this fucking part of the season. So that's got to be real frustrating for a guy that you've signed up for 3 more years and a guy that in Paul George who's playing his ass off who still doesn't have a deal.
I feel bad for Devin Booker. I feel bad for Kawhi. Like, I really do right now. Yeah. I know he's trying everything he possibly can to get that knee right. And I think there will be a time. If we can get out of this first round, man, if we can, by the grace of the basketball gods, get out of this first round. I mean, not only do we not have a chance against Oklahoma City without Kawhi, but it'll be a rough round two for us. So I'm going to stay positive. I hope Kawhi's getting all the treatment, all the shots that he needs, because we need him back if we have any shot about doing this.
It's fun too, because your guys, this Dallas Clippers series is the only one holding up the West Coast. OKC's taking care of business. They're already done and dusted. They're through. The Lakers are done. The Suns are done. So everyone's waiting for the Clippers to join or the Mavericks to join the party here. And everyone's going to get some time off, which is nice for Denver, especially because they're not playing until Saturday now against the Minnesota Timberwolves. But the Clippers are holding them up. Everyone else in the West is ready to go.
Man, let's finish it Friday. Like, that's what I would like to do. Finish it Friday and give us a couple days off. Hold on. I'm knocking on wood because I don't want to jinx anything. We've run way too long on this show, but we need to bring up we have Action Brunson and the Knicks playing right now, ready to finish off the 76ers. We have the Pacers that are about to finish off the Bucks, which you guys know how we feel about the Bucks. This probably being it for them. What do you think about New York?
Well, unfortunately, I was in transit for Jalen Brunson's incredible 47-point outburst against Philadelphia. But look, man, I think overall it's really difficult for Philly to bounce back after that game 2 loss, especially. That's something we talked a lot about on the previous podcast, but I think that's just a really, really tough one for them to bounce back from. And I know that Philly snagged a game already, but this does feel, especially when you get to a 3-1 lead, you're going back to MSG, like feels like the writing is on the wall here. And I do want to, I think it's probably important for us to mention that Joel Embiid is playing through a litany of problems. So like we're just talking about like Kawhi, feeling bad for Kawhi. I feel pretty bad for Joel Embiid, man. I mean, the guy also just never can seem to be 100% healthy when his team needs him the most. He's huffing and puffing on the court because his knee's banged up and he had to get surgery midseason so he doesn't have the conditioning. And that's exacerbating the Bell's palsy thing. Like, this is the craziest thing of all time. I can't remember a guy having come down with something like this and like just playing through it. So I do want to say, you know, shout out to Joel Embiid, man. Goddamn, you know, life sometimes can be difficult. Life sometimes can be real difficult. And I feel for him because I do think, you know, if he was just normal Joel Embiid, like, you know, versus what we got out of him in the postseason last year, even still being a little banged up coming in off of an injury as he was last season was incredible. But this just seems like too tall of a task to be playing against the Knicks and also fighting against all this shit for Joel. That's real, real tough. So, you know, shout out to the Sixers for still, you know, trying to grind it out and performing and playing as hard as they can. And Tyrese Maxey and the rest of those guys are doing their best. But damn, that's a lot.
I thought the Knicks fans were a little tacky in Philly, though, yelling the fuck Embiid. I didn't like that at all.
Well, that kind of deads a lot of the rumors about Embiid going to the Knicks. Like, I don't know. How are you going to do that now? I don't think Embiid ever wants to go to New York ever now. Maybe he'll go to Brooklyn just to spite him.
I mean, Knicks fans are lit right now, and I get it. You should be.
Yeah.
And what Brunson's doing is phenomenal. And 47 in the Garden, I mean, the talk all week was just like, you know, is Brunson over Melo? And I'm like, yeah, I think Brunson is over Melo, which is crazy. The fact that we're talking about this, going from, you know, watching Brunson in Dallas to the deal in New York and the things we thought and said, and to see him doing this right now in the playoffs with 47 is absolutely unbelievable. So proud of him. I feel so bad for Embiid. You know, we talked about on the last show about something's going on with his eyes. I knew something neurologically was going on because I know how that is. But now, you know, he wasn't at practice today with the migraines. I just want Joel to get healthy. Healthy, man. But this series is probably a wrap. It'll probably be done today. And again, back to Milwaukee. No Dame, no Giannis. There's no chance. That's just, I mean, if Middleton's 1A,
it's the worst possible scenario for the Bucks going into this. It was like, oh, there's optimism that Giannis will rejoin the team at a moment's notice, and then everything will be right. Maybe he'll miss the first two games, and then it's like, actually, he's definitely not going to be back for this series. And Dame is actually having a problem with his Achilles or calf, and Bobby Portis gets ejected in the first 7 minutes of the game, and Middleton rolls his ankle like crazy. Definitely not. It's a season from hell. Yeah, when it was the Doc might be the bigger jinxer than you or I, actually, Clips, looking back at his career. Whatever he did in 2008 is definitely rubbed off at this point. So anyway, again, tough scenario for the Bucks, right? I do think that they could have done something pretty interesting, certainly against this Pacers team, if they had everyone healthy. I mean, look, I would have been really tough for me to pick the Pacers to win this series if Giannis fully healthy, Dame fully healthy. I don't care how weird it looks at times. It just would have been real tough for me to pick that, given the caliber of those players. So quick question here. I know we're very, very close to closing it down, but do you think it's more panic time in Phoenix or more panic time in Milwaukee?
Oh, it's a shit show in Phoenix. It's such a panic in Phoenix. I think when you sit back and look at the end of the day, Milwaukee is unfortunate circumstances, right? Like, that's just what it is. Dame was killing in this series, and if you could have bought round one for which he was on the way to do, the guy was torching Indiana.
Yeah.
But when it's your Achilles, you're done. Like, Dame's not playing the rest of this series. And Giannis, at, you know, like you had brought up a couple podcasts ago, like, shut it down.
Yep.
You're hurt. shut it down this year and then run it back, because we got way too much. You'll have a summer with Doc. Maybe you can make some more moves on that team. But dude, I think a lot of people think that Phoenix is way more in trouble right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because you could make a pretty decent comparison to like the Giannis Middleton Dame piece, as looking relatively similar to the KD Booker Beal piece, where it's like, mm-hmm. all these three guys are taking up the majority of the cap space. There's not a lot of flexibility outside of those three to add depth. And that's been the major, I would say, a major problem for Milwaukee. And, you know, they decided to bring back Bobby, they bring back Brooke, and, you know, they tried to do some stuff with Pat Bev and others that they've tried to, like, Connaughton's still on the team. And I think both are in pretty weird spots, but I agree. I think it's definitely more of a dumpster fire in Phoenix. I do just quickly want to shout out Chris Middleton. He was listening to the show, obviously, because homeboy fired it up. I was asking, begging for him on the last podcast, like, do something, bro. Like get into your bag. I mean, they're leaning on you, man. You're getting paid all this money. And, you know, 18 points ain't going to be cutting it with no Giannis on the squad, right? 18 is nice when you got Giannis and Dame chipping in for 50 or 55. Mm-hmm. And he did. And he answered the bell. And unfortunately, he rolled his ankle. So I just want to tip the cap a little bit to Chris Middleton firing himself back up and getting the engine running a little bit better than previously. Look, Celtics, Heat, that's 3-1. We know the Celtics are going to win. Shout out to the Heat for snagging a game there. That was incredible. And now it's the final series. Just like the Mavericks, just like the Mavericks and the Clippers, this 4-5 in the East, Cavs and Magic are going to be holding up the rest of the teams, it feels like. You know, this series is the most flip-floppy series I've seen in a little while, where the home team is just like gung-ho, and then the away team can't even break 90. They cannot even break 90, the away team, for every single game. I'll give you this final score for the away team, regardless of location: 83-86, 83-89. That is the away team score for every single game out of the four games there. So it's unfortunate for the Magic, the team that I picked to come out of this series. They do not hold home court advantage. But big, big shout out from me to our guy Franz, who really kicked it into gear in these two home games, but especially the last game. Paolo also nailed some incredible threes. Jalen Suggs, 24 points. Can't lose a game for the Magic when Jalen Suggs is dropping 8 out of 11, 24 points. That's an incredible performance from Jalen Suggs. So momentum swings back to Cleveland. Apparently, they lose it all in the air when they fly from one place to the other. It stays. They forget the luggage that matters the most, and that's being able to put the ball in the basket.
I'm still going with Magic. We're still rooting for the Magic.
All day. I'm riding with the Magic all day.
Give me your final thought, Drew. We got to get out of here. We got a Knicks game on.
Final thought. I did spend a lovely weekend in Las Vegas. And shout out to Adam and Kaylee, the lovely couple that sealed the deal out in beautiful Viva Las Vegas. And it was a cool trip, man. Been 8 years since I've been to Vegas. I know you've been there more recently than I, because Summer League tends to fall on my vacation week that I have every year. So I haven't gone back in quite some time. And obviously, you know, 8 years is a decent amount of time. Last time I was there, I was a spry 26-year-old. And now I am like, you know, now I got like, I have a little bone spur in my heel from walking 10,000 steps around the strip, bro. Was in bed before 1 a.m. every single night. And it's a drastic change. And I'll just a quick antidote, and then I'll pass it over to you. My final thought is Vegas is definitely for debauchery. Vegas is not, in my opinion, a place that I'll be taking my lovely wife back to just to for a getaway weekend. This is boys' weekend. Get the golf going. Get the sports. Sit in the sports book for 9 hours and just gamble away your earnings. And that's really what Vegas is to me. But there was a really cool spot. Everyone knows about it. A moment where we went to Top Golf, which was a lot of fun. And I just wanted to shout out Top Golf in general. I believe they're opening one down here in San Diego pretty soon. But that was a first time that I've been to Top Golf. It was excellent. Really, really loved it.
I didn't have a final thought today, but during this show, made me realize that I'd like to apologize to the young man that I gangbanged on the other day outside of my door. I'd like to apologize. I feel bad. I probably scared your girlfriend. I know I was really aggressive, and I'm sorry that I acted that way. But you can't be wearing the jersey during a playoff game. I'm sorry. I take it seriously. So if you listen to the show, I'm sorry. I apologize, but just don't do that shit again, okay?
You can't be scurrying away any Clipper fans. You need to embrace them. Embrace them.
No, I want the real ones. At least Homeboy said he was fake, though. But like, I appreciate that. But take the jersey off, bro. Next time, I'm gonna take your jerseys and your shoes. It's the follow through with Clips and Drew, and we're ghosts.
You know what it is. You know what it is. You know where you're at.